Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5. Thank you. And Canto 5 is entitled, thank you, The Creative Impetus. And we're on chapter 14, The Forest of Enjoyment, text number 28. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So I guess we'll just do the word for word because this one is a prose verse that's difficult to chant. Translation. Sometimes the conditioned soul is attracted by illusion personified, his wife or girlfriend, and becomes eager to be embraced by a woman. Thus he loses his intelligence as well as knowledge of life's goal. At that time, no longer attempting spiritual cultivation, he becomes overly attached to his wife or girlfriend and tries to provide her with a suitable apartment. Again, he becomes very busy under the shelter of that home and is captivated by the talks, glances, and activities of his wife and children. In this way, he loses his Krishna consciousness and throws himself into the dense darkness of material existence. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. When the conditioned soul is embraced by his beloved wife, he forgets everything about Krishna consciousness. The more he becomes attached to his wife, the more he becomes implicated in family life. One Bengali poet, Bankim Chandra, says that to the eyes of the lover, the beloved is always very beautiful, even though ugly. This attraction is called Deva Maya. The attraction between man and woman is a cause of bondage for both. Actually, both belong to the prakriti, the superior energy of the Lord. But both are actually prakriti, female. However, because both want to enjoy one another, they are sometimes described as purusha or male. Actually, neither is purusha, but both can be superficially described as purusha. As soon as man and woman are united, they become attached to home, hearth, land, friendship, and money. In this way, they are both entrapped in material existence. The word buja lata upagudha, meaning being embraced by beautiful arms which are compared to creepers, describes the way the conditioned soul is bound within this material world. The products of sex life, sons and daughters certainly follow. This is the way of material existence. And again, sometimes people complain that the movies are full of sex and violence nowadays, and therefore people shouldn't see them. But actually, the Srimad Bhagavatam is full of sex and violence too. But in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the sex and violence is described in relationship with Krishna so that we can benefit by hearing about it. So here the power of the attraction of male and female is being described and how it can affect our consciousness. So there's many different things that Prabhupada talks about here. One statement he makes is, attraction between men and women is a cause of bondage for both. So there's a couple verses in the Shastra which describe this, which I hardly ever get to quote because the verse isn't specifically about this, so I'm very happy to be able to quote them today. They're so heavy, I didn't think I could get away with quoting them in Alachua because people would complain. But I'll quote it here. Natatasya vaven moho bandas chanya prasangataha yoshit sangad itapungso itatatsangi sangataha. So this is Lord Kapiladev instructing his mother about the movements of the living entities. And he says, the infatuation and bondage which accrue to a man from attachment to any other object is not as complete as that resulting from attachment to a woman or the fellowship of men who are fond of women. So that's a very powerful statement. Later on, in the succeeding verses, Prabhupada also explains that this same problem exists for women who are too much attached to men, in case you were thinking you could get off the hook in that way. So basically there's two words that are very powerful in this verse. One is moho, which is illusion. The other is bandha, which is bondage. And the bondage was what was Prabhupada was speaking about today. So this is Lord Kapila, of course. And Lord Kapila appeared in a different period of time. But closer to home is actually the words of Lord Krishna, who appeared just 5,000 years ago. And Krishna uttered a verse that was practically exactly the same as this verse by Lord Kapila, except that it has one word that's different. Na tadasya bhaven klesho bandas chanya prasangata yoshit sangatata pumso yatata sangi sangataha. Instead of saying that there's nothing causes more illusion in bondage, he says nothing causes more misery in bondage. So this is Lord Krishna, whose Bhagavad Gita we study, that we memorize verses from. This is our worshipable deity who we're giving our whole life and soul to. And his opinion is that there's nothing causes more bondage and misery than male-female relationships in this world. Therefore, we should take that statement very seriously, just like we take up Krishna's other statements very seriously. So I wanted to mention that. So what to do about this problem is described in a very nice purport in this section by Lord Kapila. It's in the purport to this verse that says, just try to understand the mighty strength of my Maya in the shape of woman, the mere movement of your eyebrows can keep even the greatest conquerors of the world under her grip. In this particular purport, Prabhupada asked the question, where does this male-female attraction come from that's so powerful? And the answer is, of course, from Krishna. He quotes the verse from Srimad Bhagavatam, Janmad Yasya Yataha, that everything actually emanates from the Supreme Person. And he goes on to say, as a common male wants to be attracted by a female, that propensity similarly exists in the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He also wants to be attracted by the features of the beautiful features of a woman. Now the question is, if he wants to be captivated by such womanly attraction, would he be attracted by any material woman? It is not possible. Even persons who are in this material existence can give up womanly attraction if they're attracted by the Supreme Brahman. Such is the case with Haridas Thakur. A beautiful prostitute tried to attract him in the dead of night, but since he was situated in devotional service and transcendental love of Godhead, Haridas Thakur was not captivated. Rather, he turned the prostitute into a great devotee by his transcendental association. This material attraction, therefore, can certainly not attract the Supreme Lord. When he wants to be attracted by a woman, he has to create such a woman from his own energy. That woman is Radharani. It is explained by the Goswamis that Radharani is the manifestation of the pleasure potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When the Supreme Lord wants to derive transcendental pleasure, he has to create a woman from his internal potency. Thus, the tendency to be attracted by womanly beauty is not natural because it exists in the spiritual world. In the material world, it is reflected pervertedly, and therefore there are so many inebrieties. Instead of being attracted by material beauty, if one is accustomed to be attracted by the beauty of Radharani and Krishna, then the statement of Bhagavad Gita, Param Drishtva Nivartate, holds true. When one is attracted by the transcendental beauty of Radha and Krishna, he is no longer attracted by material feminine beauty. That is the special significance of Radha Krishna worship. That is testified to by Yamunacharya. He says, since I become attracted by the beauty of Radha and Krishna, when there is attraction for a woman or memory of sex life with a woman, I at once spit on it and my face turns in disgust. When we are attracted by Madana Mohan and the beauty of Krishna and his consorts, then the shackles of conditioned life, namely the beauty of a material woman, cannot attract us. So that's a nice point that Prabhupada gives us some clue how we can become free from this male-female bondage. We can be attached to the service of the divine couple, Radha and Krishna. Every day we have the good fortune of coming and seeing them and meditating on their transcendental beauty. He also goes on later in those purports to say that in grahastha life, if the man is attracted to the woman for the sense gratification that she provides, which he enumerates as her beauty and her service, and if the woman's attracted to the sense gratification that the man provides, i.e., an apartment, ornaments, children, etc., then that will be a cause of bondage for both of them. But if they can become attached to serving Krishna and to doing duties in Krishna consciousness, and then because Krishna is in the center, their consciousness can be purified. So as another point that Prabhupada makes in this purport is he talks about how the how one's bondage becomes extended in family life. First, one becomes attached to a member of the opposite sex. And he says here, as soon as man and woman are united, they become attached to home, hearth, land, friendship, and money. And that basically sounds like a paraphrase of a nice verse by Lord Kapila, or not Lord Kapila, but Lord Rishabhadev, where he describes that in great detail. Punksastriya maituni bhava etam tayormito ridaya grantimahu atogriya shetra sutapta vitaya janasya mohoyam aham imeti. The attraction between male and female is the basic principle of material existence. On the basis of this misconception, which ties together the hearts of the male and female, one becomes attracted to his body, home, property, children, relatives, and wealth. In this way, he increases life's illusions and thinks in terms of I and mine. In the purport, Prabhupada says that sex serves as a natural attraction between male and female, and when they are married, their relationship becomes more involved. And due to the entangling relationship between man and woman, there is a sense of illusion whereby one thinks, this man is my husband or this woman is my wife. This is called hridaya granti, the hard knot in the heart. This knot is very difficult to undo. Even though a man and woman separate, either for the principles of anashram or simply to get a divorce. In any case, the man always thinks of the woman and the woman always thinks of the man. Thus a person becomes materially attached to family, property, children, even though all of these are temporary. The possessor unfortunately identifies with this property and wealth. Sometimes, even after renunciation, one becomes attached to a temple or to the few things that constitute the property of a sannyasi. But such attachment is not as strong as family attachment. So, as far as this family attachment goes, I remember in Alachua I had a friend named Madana Mohan who actually came here Do you remember when Madan Mohan Prabhu came to visit? Yeah. He very much likes to give class, and he was in ecstasy because Radhanath Maharaj allowed him to give class many days while he was here. We have so many Prabhupada disciples in Alachua, usually except for Shesha and Nagaraj, who give very, very nice classes. Everyone gets a chance to give class like once a month. But he can talk about Krishna all day and all night. So he was very, very glad to be able to give in such facility here. At any rate, he's been in household life for... he has his son who's in his mid-20s, so he's probably been married almost 30 years by now. And he was describing from his own experience how when he was a brahmachari, he had one box of stuff, and when his wife was a brahmachari, she had one box of stuff, and then they got married and they had two boxes of stuff, and then they lived in an apartment, and then at the end of a month or two, they moved to a bigger place, and by that time, they had four boxes of stuff, you know, and apparently he had just moved recently, and that they had to hire a truck that was like so many meters long and so many meters wide and so many meters high just to fit all the stuff they'd accumulated over the last 30 years. And it was just incredible, the number of things that they'd accumulated, and most of which they weren't even using, but it just had added up. And that's just how it goes. I was... about 22 years ago, I spent 6 years working with a devotee named Adi Keshava Prabhu, who formerly was a sannyasi but got married and had a computer business, and I was one of his programmers. And he, in the course of 6 years, he moved six times, and I was engaged in helping him move his junk from one place to another, and it was just incredible, just to move six times in 6 years was incredible enough, but just the amount of stuff that was being moved, you know, it was just exhausting just to meditate upon it, what to speak if you actually had to do something with it. So it's definitely a fact. Even if you plan not to be entangled, it's not a reality. It's just the mode of passion is the mode of passion, and it does what it does. You know? Another thing is I think about in terms of how this family life expands is that in the Vanashram system, there's 25 years devoted to the Grihastha Ashram. So in that 25 years, you spend accumulating attachments. And then the next 25 years, what you do is you get rid of the attachments that you acquired in the previous 25 years. And they allowed a whole 25 years to get rid of that 25 years of attachments that you accumulated. So that's another indication of how entangling it is, that they are built into the system that it takes 25 years to bring yourself back to the point where you were when you got into it in the first place. So it's something to consider if somebody is planning to move in that direction. As many years as you spend getting into it, you'll have to spend getting out of it. Let's see. Another very powerful quote, actually, in this purport was the first quote, the first sentence that Prabhupada says, which is sort of startling. When the conditioned soul is embraced by his beloved wife, he forgets everything about Krishna consciousness. So that's very powerful. So why is that? The idea is that Krishna consciousness is the consciousness that I am the servant of Krishna. And when we're engaged in enjoying our own senses, that's completely antithetical to the idea of engaging our senses in Krishna's service. Our senses are actually meant to be to give pleasure to Krishna, and we're completely misusing them to give pleasure to our temporary material body. And so, basically, then Prabhupada goes on and talks about how we're actually prakriti, we're actually nature, we're actually female, and we're actually meant to give pleasure to Krishna, who's the real Purusha, the supreme enjoyer. But both the male and female are pretending to be Purushas, or pretending to be enjoyers and exploiting each other's body for their own sense, satisfaction. So actually the whole thing is based on a complete illusion about what our identity is. We're actually meant to be predominated enjoyers. We, by giving pleasure to Krishna, we actually feel enjoyment ourselves. Not that we have to endeavor to please our senses and enjoy that way. So this whole experience of enjoyment is based on a complete illusion. So that's one problem with it. It's based on an illusion. Another problem is that it's temporary. In the West, they have this degraded conception of a male-female relationship called the one-night stand. Basically, that's basically when a man and woman get together and they engage in sense gratification for one night, and that's that. That's the end of their relationship. And by cultured people, such a relationship is considered to be very degraded and debased and demeaning. But actually, our situation in the material world is that instead of having a one-night stands, we have one-life stands. We have relationships based on mutual sense gratification that last one life. But for the eternal spiritual soul, who's existed for millions and billions and trillions of years, what's the value of a one-life stand? Actually, it's very insignificant. Sometimes people, they get so absorbed in these male-female relationships, they consider them all in all, and that, you know, that they give all their love to this person like that. But it's worth considering that in our past life, there was somebody else who we were equally attracted to, and we don't even know who they are now. And not only that, we don't even care who they are, because we've got somebody new, and we're fully absorbed in them. So in one sense, it's sort of a kind of cheating from the eternal point of view, because actually we're looking for an eternal relationship of love. We're putting so much time and energy into this. We're acting practically as if it is eternal, but actually it's going to come to an end with the end of this body. And it will have no more meaning than that person we fell in love with last lifetime, or that person we fell in love with two lifetimes ago, or three lifetimes ago, or 10 million lifetimes ago. After the time of death, really, it's all the same. It's just another forgotten relationship. So that's another thing to consider, that it's actually temporary. And so, of course, the satisfaction we're looking for, then, isn't in these temporary illusory relationships. But there is actually a complete situation of satisfaction. And that's when our senses aren't engaged in another conditioned soul, but when they're actually absorbed in Krishna. There's a very, very, very beautiful section toward the end of the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita where Lord Chaitanya is experiencing the presence of Krishna. And he's describing that with his eyes, he's drinking the beauty of the beautiful lotus face of Krishna. And his ears are attracted to Krishna's flute. And his sense of smell is attracted to the fragrance of Krishna's body, which is described even more. Apparently, musk is a very fragrant substance. And that this fragrance of Krishna's body is many, many times more fragrant than the fragrance of musk. And then he talks about how that his tongue is attracted to the nectar of Krishna's lips, and that his sense of touch is attracted to the touch of Krishna's body, which is described as like being more cooling than millions of moons or more cooling than sandalwood pulp. So that actually in the pure state of pure spiritual ecstasy, our individual senses are attracted by the individual features of Krishna's transcendental body. And that's what is to be aspired for. When when we're completely satisfied to see the beauty of Krishna, when we're completely satisfied to hear Krishna's flute, etc. So, of course, Lord Chaitanya is Lord Chaitanya. He is Krishna himself in the mood of Radharani, so he can experience this great spiritual pleasure, but we're stuck somewhere in between being a conditioned soul and a liberated soul. So what hope is there for us at our state to experience Krishna with our senses? And there's a very nice verse in that, in this connection, in actually three verses together by Maharaj Ambarish, which are quoted in Srila Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita in chapter 2, text 61. And I thought I would read them because they talk about how we can connect with Krishna with our senses in our conditioned state and thereby experience some spiritual rasa. Savaya mana Krishna padada vindayo vachangshi vaikunta gunana varnane karavhalir mandira marjanadishu shutim chakayarchita satkatodaye ukundalingalaya darshane drisho tadbritya gatra shprashanga sangamam gunam chatat pada saroja sorabe Shrimat Talasya Rasanam Tadarpite Padohare Shetra Padanu Sarpane Shiro Rishikesha Padavi Vandane Kamam Chadasena Tukama Kamaya Yuto Tamashloka Janashaya Rati. King Ambarish fixed his mind on the lotus feet of Lord Krishna, engaged his words in describing the abode of the Lord, his hands in cleansing the temple of the Lord, his ears in hearing the pastimes of the Lord, his eyes in seeing the form of the Lord, his body in touching the body of the devotee, his nostrils in smelling the flavor of the flowers offered to the lotus feet of the Lord, his tongue in tasting the tulsi leaves offered to him, his legs in traveling to the holy place where his temple is situated, his head in offering obeisances to the Lord, and his desires in fulfilling the desires of the Lord. And all these qualifications made him fit to become a Matpara devotee of the Lord. So the idea is that we have all these different senses, and even in the course of our practice of sadhana bhakti, we engage our different senses in Krishna's service, and thereby we experience some connection with Krishna, or some transcendental pleasure from connecting with Krishna in this way. And King Ambarishi was so expert at doing this that he became more advanced than this big famous yogi Durvasa Muni. Just by doing these same transcendental activities of, if you notice the different things he did, they're all practically things that Prabhupada told us to do, and things that the six Goswamis mentioned in Nectar of Devotion for practicing sadhana bhakti. And so he became such a pure devotee who was perfectly protected by the Sudarshan Chakra when Durvasa Muni tried to chastise him. So, and these, we may. Because we do them every day, we may take them lightly and forget about how powerful they are. But these different things like offering obeisances or smelling the tulsi leaves offered to the Lord, or, you know, they're very powerful. And they can completely transform our consciousness and give us spiritual pleasure. So, I wanted to finish by talking about verse talks about the conditioned soul being embraced by his beloved wife. So I thought I would talk about embracing in Krishna consciousness. Because I'm a brahmachari, I can't talk about that kind of embrace. But that prayer we just mentioned by Maharaj Ambarish, or that verse about Ambarish, said that he engaged his body in touching the bodies of the devotees. So actually we do have a sense of touch, and it can be purified by engaging in devotional service. And of course, in the temples I've been to in India, it's very easy to touch the bodies of the devotees because they're so filled with people that you can't avoid touching the bodies of devotees, right? Especially at the Sunday feast, right? You can't dance without crashing into at least 10 people. So the devotees are very pure because they're always engaged in Krishna's service. And when we touch their bodies, we actually become purified. Just like in the converse, you know, there's a class of people known as untouchable because they are always absorbed in cleaning toilets and stuff like that. So they're considered to touch them, they would become contaminated. And so in a positive way, the devotees, they're always engaged in devotional service. So when we touch their bodies, we actually become purified. And we can get the loving embrace and benedictory embrace of advanced Vaishnavas. Sometimes we offer obeisances to some senior devotee and then they'll embrace us like that. Like sometimes Radhana Swami embraces devotees. I remember Sridhar Swami used to embrace me sometimes. That was very, very, very warm, loving embrace. And, it was, and so this is a way we can, our sense of touch can be purified in Krishna's service. And another thing I was thinking about is Krishna's embrace. So we may, of course, in one sense, Krishna's embrace may be a long time away for us. But in one sense, we can embrace the holy name with our ears, right? Where we can actually, when we take Krishna prasadam, we're taking the nectar of Krishna's lips. Right? So actually, we are very intimately connected with Krishna. Like Prabhupada said, that when we're chanting Hare Krishna, Krishna is dancing on our tongue. So our tongue is touching Krishna. Right? Our tongue is touching Krishna when we chant the holy name. So if we think about, if we value our connection with Krishna, then we can relish some pleasure from these contacts. Like when we take prasadam, if we actually think, oh, I'm so fortunate to get the nectar of Krishna's lips, right? That can add to our relishing the experience. And instead of just, you know, having a nice sensory experience, we can all actually be experiencing coming in touch with Krishna in a deeper way. So by our meditation, we can enhance our contact with Krishna. For example, when we chant the holy names, the holy name is non-different from Krishna. So we can think Krishna himself is personally present in every name of the mantra that I'm chanting. And therefore, I should hear every syllable of the mantra with great attention because Krishna himself is personally present. So when we take Krishna's presence in these forms very seriously, it really enhances our practice of devotional service a lot, actually. It makes it a lot more fulfilling. I wanted to talk about the embrace of Krishna received by a Gopa Kumar. So there's this elaborate story called the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. The second part talks about how this devotee Gopa Kumar actually went home back to Godhead. And Krishna was so glad to see him. He ran, grabbed him and embraced him. And they fell down unconscious in spiritual ecstasy. So actually when we go back to Godhead, we can get Krishna's embrace like that. Krishna will be eager to see us come back. We've been rotting in this material world for so many years, and he's been waiting for us to turn to him, and then finally in this life we finally turn to him. And by a practice of devotional service, we can become pure enough to go back to Godhead, and we can have Krishna run toward us to embrace us, just like Gopakumar. So Gopakumar, if you read through the elaborate story of the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, basically, he was a very simple devotee, a simple cowherd boy, and he maintained his simplicity practically. Although he was made king of heaven and he was made Lord Brahma, and he went through Vaikuntha and Ayodhya and all these different places, he always maintained his faith in his guru. Whenever he came across his guru, he was always very respectful. He always offered obeisances. He always listened with great attention to whatever his guru said, and he executed it. And the mantra that his guru gave him, he chanted that mantra without fail. Wherever he was, whether it was in Svargaloka, whether he was in Vaikuntha, Ayodhya, it didn't matter. Wherever he was, he always remembered the mantra that his guru gave him. And by these qualifications of being a pure devotee of his guru, by always offering him all respect and carrying out his instructions, and by always faithfully chanting the mantra that he gave, he became so elevated, he went back to the spiritual world, and he got Lord Krishna's loving embrace. So that's something that's possible for us if we follow in his footsteps. We very faithfully carry out respectfully the instructions of our guru, and we always have great faith, infallible faith in this mantra that my guru gave me this mantra, therefore I must chant every day 16 rounds without fail. This might come up, that might come up, it doesn't matter. I promised my guru I would chant these 16 rounds, and I'm going to do it. With such a determination, ultimately we'll become eligible for Lord Krishna's transcendental embrace and not have to worry about the false embraces of the material world. So I'm sorry, that's the best I can do. A very poor scholar of Srila Prabhupada's books. And even, I haven't taken Rasamandala's teacher's training course number 2, therefore my class has still many defects. So I'm hoping to take them in February and improve in my presentation. Does anyone have any questions or comments about any of the topics discussed in today's verse or class? I'll read the verse again one more time to give you a chance to think. Sometimes the conditioned soul is attracted by illusion personified, his wife or girlfriend, and becomes eager to be embraced by a woman. Thus he loses his intelligence as well as knowledge of life's goal. At that time, no longer attempting spiritual cultivation, he becomes overly attached to his wife or girlfriend and tries to provide her with a suitable apartment. Again, he becomes very busy under the shelter of that home and is captivated by the talks, glances, and activities of his wife and children. In this way, he loses his Krishna consciousness and throws himself in the dense darkness of material existence. Okay, no questions? You have a question?
Hare Krishna, thank you very much. I was wanting to know, there's the mundane attraction to external form, but like when we see the deities, they're so beautiful. What's the difference between the attraction to the deities and attraction to mundane form? Like we may see some deities that we're more attracted to than others, and we're seeing things on an external level, and there may be, you know, wow, that today Krishna's dressed so beautifully, I'm so attracted, you know, like that, but it's... sometimes it's seen as relative. So how do we appreciate on transit? How do we know the difference between mundane lust applied to Krishna as opposed to actual spiritual attraction?
So, well, Krishna, from Krishna's point of view, Krishna is always spiritual. And any attraction to Krishna is always good. Even people who are negatively attracted to Krishna, they become purified. So we should always be very happy by what about whatever attraction we ever have for Krishna, because we're very fortunate. Of course, devotees do have individual ishtadevs, worshipable deities, and so it's not artificial that a person may be attracted to a particular deity and not another deity. In fact, even in the Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada in his purport talks about how he may be attracted by particular forms of Krishna. There's one nice purport where he talks about that. I don't know if I can find it this quickly, but basically he talks about how there's different forms of Lord Vishnu, Rama, Nisringa, etc., and one may be attracted to any one of these forms, and that one can chant the Hare Krishna mantra and worship the Lord, but that one's attraction may be any of these forms. So even within the Krishna form, one may be attracted to a particular deity. So that's also all right. And, of course, the question is, I suppose, whether there's a very highly advanced state when one has like a ishtadev and has a spiritual relationship with that. And then I imagine you could have, just out of your own sentimentality, create such a, you know, intimate relationship when it hasn't actually been developed to that extent. You know? So, I guess if it's always present, that indicates that it's real. You know? Because just like in this world, people get infatuated with boys and girls, and they're really super into them for a certain amount of time, and then they're not, you know. So somebody could develop that sort of infatuation with a guru or with Krishna, for example, you know. And just like people are into fads, you know, they're really into this thing for a while, and then they're really into that thing, just of the nature of the emotive passion, actually. So one could do that with Krishna, even before one has a high realization of one's ishtadev, one could be sentimentally attracted to a certain form of Krishna. But that whatever attraction we have for Krishna is good and it's purifying. And I think we all have authorities, especially in Chaupada, everyone has a counselor. Even if somehow or other in other parts of ISKCON we've managed to construct a situation for ourselves where we have no visible authority, at least here, so we can consult our authority about whether you know, how spiritual this relationship we've dreamed up with Krishna actually is. You know, but the fact of the matter is that all attraction for Krishna is good, and the pure devotees, of course, they're attracted to Krishna no matter how he's dressed, because they're attracted to Krishna. Just like, you know, it's interesting. So, sometimes people, I think Vyasaki does this. He likens the different tunes that we chant Hare Krishna to be like different clothes decorating a deity, you know, like that. So sometimes we may hear somebody chant a kirtan, right? And they may their voice may not be in tune, right? So that may disturb our mind, you know? And we may not like the kirtan, you know? But if we just listen to the words of the kirtan and forget about the tune, after a while we'll notice that we're dancing and chanting ecstatically in the kirtan, because actually Krishna is there, you know, even though externally it's not something that's palatable to our senses, because the holy name is Krishna and we're attached to Krishna, that if we just forget about the tune, it may be difficult for you, but because Because it's our duty to go to the kirtan anyway, whether we like it or not. Rather than suffer through a kirtan for 10 minutes, I decided I would focus on the essence of the kirtan, which after all is the holy name. And I found that actually you can actually even get more into it than just by forgetting about whether you like the guy who's singing or whether you like the tune or whatever, you know. So we have a spiritual attraction for the deity just because he's Krishna, and that's beyond whether he's dressed nicely a certain day or not nicely. So due to my limited realization, I think that's about all I can say about that topic. Was that helpful in any way? Okay. Anybody else have any comments or questions? Oh, it's time. It's 9 o'clock, which, you know, in Tirupati they have a sign that says, on one side it says, Prabhuji, you have 5 minutes, you know? And on another side it says, Prabhuji, your time is up. And it's in big letters, like 3 inches high, you know? On a laminated sign, you know? It was really far out. And they didn't show me the 5 minutes because they'd spaced out, you know? They just showed me, Prabhuji, it's time's up, in these 3-inch high letters, you know, because it had gotten to be 9:30 or whatever it was. It was sort of overwhelming. At any rate, thank you for your kind attention. His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada Ki.